You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France, in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we are in Marseille.
Where are we, Francois?
We're in the Stade Vélodrome. I mean, I know the name has changed, but it's very difficult for me, after coming to this stadium for 50 years, to call it, you know, something else than Stade Vélodrome. In my language, it's even Le Stade, you know? Where are you going? I'm going to Le Stade. There's no other one in the world for me. That's these stadiums. So that's where we are, in Marseille, at Le Stade Vélodrome. Call it Orange Vélodrome if you wish, but I won't. A little bit disappointed by the turnout today. We were expecting, apparently all the tickets were given out for free had been booked. And as we said just before we, you know, I started talking, that there must be about 15,000 people in the stands, which as Lionel rightly pointed out, is about the attendance of a low-key League Cup game for Marseille. It's a little bit disappointing, but you know, as you can hear, cycling crowds are noisy as well. So
it's a nice atmosphere. We've just seen Mikel Landa roll out the start house. That means the next rider to go is Romain Bardet, and there was several of the French favourites have got a big cheer. Tommy Vogler, Sylvain Chavanel. So I forgot actually. Rigoberto Urán is. I'm anticipating the result here. We're anticipating that Urán will leapfrog Romain Bardet, but Urán is next out of the start house. Interesting when Quintana, his countryman, went off. There were a few boos around me, sort of good-natured booing, not serious, but not really sure why that was. But we're expecting, obviously, huge cheers for Romain Bardet when he goes off soon. But
We're in a football stadium, so boorish, oafish partisan behaviour is kind of second nature.
Maybe something happens to people when they step into a football stadium, who knows? But I mean, we were very excited about this because it's novel and we think it's got great potential. But there are probably fewer people in this stadium in the middle of a city than will travel to a mountain and stand on a mountain. You know, you'll see tens of thousands of people on our Alpe d'Huez, on our Mont Ventoux, in the middle of nowhere. So very odd. I should pause for a moment because, as you can hear, there's a lot of support for Romain Bardet. Romain Bardet. We're maybe guilty of a bit of complacency. In 2 minutes' time, Chris Froome will go, but the race is still open between those top three.
It is, but just on the atmosphere, imagine if this was full. This would be absolutely incredible. That was loud enough with 15,000 people in here. This has real potential, but the organisation of today, just for whatever reason, hasn't quite worked. Maybe free tickets isn't such a great idea. If people have paid 5 or 10 euros, they'd have committed to coming and they'd have taken their seats. But then again, you know, we look on the climb out in the centre of Marseille there, and there's huge crowds out there. So, you know, let's not be too negative, but also, you know, let's put into context that perhaps cycling sometimes overestimates how much people want to sit in one place for 3 or 4 hours watching what is basically the roll out and roll in of a time trial. But as for the race, you're absolutely right. Chris Froome's going to go in a matter of seconds. Booms. Interesting.
Certainly not a universally favourable response. Let's see what happens when he rolls out of the start house. Sorry, Lionel.
I think it was a bit off for Francois to boo as well. But listeners, he didn't really. He didn't really.
Well, actually, you never heard the boos, you know, for the visiting team when you play football here, so it's only fair enough, you know.
So Mixed response.
Yeah, mixed. Yeah, I was about to say mixed reception. Yeah, mixed response to Chris Froome. Not so bad. It could have been worse.
It's nothing like rugby teams get in Paris when they're preparing for a conversion or a penalty, is it? Let's face it.
No. Yeah. It's a once again, cycling crowds are probably much better mannered than football crowds anyway. So yeah, no, I think it was there was a kind of equal, you know, sharing of boos and who's for Chris. So well, now you know the big battle is started. So
but if it's anything like the French rugby crowd, if the French riders underperform, they'll start booing Romain Bardet when he appears.
They will for sure. They might do it. You know, the Marseille crowd is especially known for being very difficult. This is a place where. I've seen many times when Marseille were losing, old guys. In the old days, you had cushions, you know, because the seats were in wood, and you had cushions, paper cushions with straw in them. And if Marseille lost, you saw all these cushions ending up on pitch. It was quite, and it was obviously, you know, against our players, not against the visiting team. So yeah, the French crowd could turn against Romain Bardet. My impression, to be honest, was that the biggest cheers we heard were from Warren Barguil. He's undoubtedly now become the new poo-poo, the new Virenque. I mean, the crowd favorite, obviously. Maybe the French like the polka dot better than they do the yellow jersey, we see.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you could, Bardet and Barguil, there are echoes of Anquetil and Poulidor with Bardet is a very kind of cool, calculating, very professional, very clean-cut guy. Maybe drinks a bit less champagne than Jacques Anquetil, indulges in fewer barbecues on rest days. But they are like a latter-day Anquetil and Poulidor, with one crucial difference today. Bardet is not quite Anquetil when it comes to time trialing, is he?
Well, he probably picks his wines better than Anquetil used to, because Anquetil, we told the Cycling Podcast listeners before, once pumped a sangria from a tub with a pipe, you know, which is, I don't see Romain Bardet doing that. But Romain Bardet, remember as well, in Nuit Saint-Georges, talked to the Cycling Podcast about exquisite Burgundy wine. So there you are. Yeah, Romain Bardet is a little bit more upper class, which is rather strange because he comes from the country. Like, I mean, Brioude is even more the country than the Brittany places, you know, around Saint-Brieuc and where Warren Barguil comes from. But you know, obviously there is that little difference. Well, let's see if in the future, we the press, you know, try to, you know, beef up that opposition.
Wah-wah, Warren Barguil finishing there with a little raised his hand and waved at the crowd, which is nice to see. Actually, Alberto Contador got a huge cheer, didn't he? Arguably as big as for Barguil there. That might be the last we see of Contador in the Tour de France.
I think he's going to do tomorrow. But after that, maybe not.
Forgetting about tomorrow.
Sorry.
The last we might see of Alberto Contador in a meaningful stage of the Tour de France.
Fair point. Yeah.
I tweeted about the crowd in the stadium. I had a few interesting responses. Somebody saying that he paid, Fergus Mead says he paid €7 for his to be delivered to Ireland. They arrived the day before I left for my holidays. Another person, Nicola Crane, says friend ordered yesterday, confirmation said collect in person by 13th of July. Lack of information, recollection on day. Others saying that what is there to see? Riders rolling out and coming back in. As you say, Lionel, there are a lot more people, it seems, out on the course, on the hill, against the barriers, probably five or six deep from the look of things, and maybe that's just traditionally where you watch a bike race, by the side of the road.
Well, it is, isn't it? Cycling fans know the best vantage points. That's why they all go to hills and mountains to go and see the racing action. But having said that, if you're going to hire a 60,000-seat stadium for an event like this, it needs to be full. And the organisers have to kind of take responsibility for making sure it is full. And I guess if they ever do something like this again, they'll do it slightly differently.
Obviously, from my previous experience of this kind of events, like the Olympics or others, the ticketing system is obviously to blame, because like 2 months ago already, it was said that all the tickets had been booked, and it's so very easy to get on the website, as a kid or whoever, book 50 tickets and then not go. So I think that the system was probably very naive, and lots of people who were planning to go. I have friends and family who were planning to go, and read in the papers that it was full up, and just couldn't bother. So in the end, they were watching it on TV. So yeah, I mean, they probably have to rethink the way the ticketing has been done, and because I'm sure there is a real enthusiasm for this kind of things in Marseille. They had a silly kind of roller skating on ice exhibition in the beginning of the year. I think it was in January on the old port, and there were 200,000 people there. So my impression is that something got wrong, in the ticketing system. But I'm sure, and we saw it on TV on the climb to Notre Dame de la Garde, that the real cycling crowd, that's where they are.
We're watching Romain Bardet go through the time check at the top of the hill. He's slipping down the placings, 13th fastest, 15th fastest, 17th, about par for Romain Bardet probably. I mean, 17th, still slipping down, 19th, but kind of what you'd expect. Chris Froome is riding up, as you said, Lionel, in the time trial position, looks very smooth.
Well, he's only just reached the bottom, hasn't he?
That's a good point.
But he hasn't yet come out of that time trial position. I'd imagine he'll try and hold it as long as he possibly can. Whereas Bardet is labouring a little bit. You feel like you want to urge him on to make it close, but I don't think it's going to be close, is it? He's now slipping at this time check down towards the 50s. Not quite, 40 seconds.
So probably below par. I mean, it is a steep old hill. A lot of riders have really struggled up there. It's hard. There's no fluidity there at all in Bardet. So Froome is still, he's slipped down to a really low gear, but he's still looking pretty smooth.
Looks beautiful down there. I think if I was given the choice, I'd have gone to the hill as well and had a little look at the Notre Dame at the top. But Froome is, well, he's challenging the time of his teammate Kwiatkowski, who leads at this checkpoint, the second checkpoint. He's not going to be inside that, I don't think, but he's certainly going to be best of the GC riders.
It's going to be pretty close, I think.
Looks like Team Sky are going to, again, perform like they did in the first time trial. I said and I tweeted to some success that Chris Froome won the tour on the first day. And, obviously, he looks about to win it also on the last day. And Team Sky seem to be performing very well with Michał Kwiatkowski. After all the tremendous work he did for Froome, as a teammate, doing all right. I think Landa's time was quite good as well. So, what to say?
Can't be just the suits, because Froome is wearing his Lecoq Sportif skin suit provided by ESO. And, of course, there was the wee stushy in Dusseldorf over the bubbles on the suit. Here comes Fabio Aru. Rigoberto Urán just finished the seventh fastest time, but he had a bit of a mishap on his way into the stadium.
He did. He had to put his foot down, and he hit the Skoda barrier on the left-hand turn into the, well, as they just come off the road and into the velodrome.
He was quite lucky.
He was lucky. He didn't go down. He managed to stay upright, clip his foot back in, and probably only lost a handful of seconds there. But a good ride by Urán. I think we're going to see him certainly second in the Tour.
Absolutely no information in the stadium at all about what's happening in the race. We didn't even get Urán's time checks at all. Very poor again. I mean, we're following the action on the screens, but really there's no information. There's nothing to communicate how close the battle is. But Bardet is having a bad day, and that rhymes.
Romain Bardet,
and he may even lose his place in the podium to Mikel Landa. on the big screen we can see Bardet approaching and a yellow figure in the background. Froome isn't too far behind him. Bardet on final approach to the stadium now. Well, that reaction speaks for itself. Bardet got a huge cheer, and then just behind him, quite menacing looking almost, this figure all in yellow. Froome almost catching him on the line, and the crowd reacted. I think probably a bit of disappointment mingled in with that, because you know this today was scripted to be a French triumph, if you like, after a tour that suited Bardet and where he had a real good chance of finishing the podium. We don't actually know yet what the situation is, but Bodnar has won the time trial by 1 second from Kwiatkowski, and Chris Froome is the winner of the Tour for the fourth time.
I know what you mean about the menacing figure there. It's hard to look menacing in bright yellow, dressed up like a banana, but he did when the camera shot there had poor old Romain Bardet in front of Froome. You could almost see Bardet's 3 weeks evaporate.
It's like seeing a little fish and then a massive shark appearing behind it.
Yeah, and Bardet obviously knew his shoulder slumped and his head went down and he was really suffering. And really his whole tour came down to not wanting to be caught here inside the velodrome.
But a cheer because Bardet has held on to his position on the podium by 1 second from Mikel Landa. Will we see Landa go for the bunch sprint tomorrow and get a time bonus? No, I think...
Let's face it, I mean... We kept saying it was one of the closest tour in recent history, and today, I mean, Chris Froome smashed that idea to pieces. You had Rigoberto Urán, who looked in contention, riding a good race, and suddenly, kind of crashing in the barriers. You know, probably a symbol of the fact that there's no toppling Chris Froome today. And as you said, you know, and to see, that yellow shark, about to swallow the little fish Bardet almost on the finish line. Well, you know, the point is made. Chris Froome wins his fourth tour, no contest. I mean, he was the strongest, and the others were just, also runs. And that's the point that's been made today here in the Stade Vélodrome.
No stage win, though, for Chris Froome. A lot of people fancied him for the stage win today. Reminds me a bit of the Giro, where it was all about Tom Dumoulin. People almost forgot that there was a stage winner there, Jos van Emden. A lot of people, even me, I was thinking back that I think that Dumoulin moved up from fourth to first and won the stage. He didn't, of course. And here, Magic Bodnar, one hopes that he gets the credit he deserves for that, because he, of course, went very close earlier in the race. Obviously, a really, really strong rider.
Well, yeah, if you witnessed Tony Martin's demeanour when he reached the finish here, he looked like a broken man also. Would have expected to do a lot better than he has done. But Bodnar, we know he's strong. We remember him last year being extremely strong for Tinkoff. He's had a fairly quiet tour this year, but that's an outstanding performance. And for it to be so close as well, I mean, Kwiatkowski there, I mean, I know he hasn't got to do any riding on the front tomorrow on the Champs-Élysées, but after all the work he's done, that really underlines what a strong rider he's been in this tour. To do all of that work, to come to a standstill on the Col d'Izoard a couple of days ago, still managed to pull a ride like that out of the bag, quicker than his teammate Chris Froome. I mean, you talk about Team Sky and when will their dominance of the tour end, but they've got so many resources, they've got so many riders that could step up, and yet I suppose that says the greatest thing about Chris Froome this 3 weeks. You know, he's got a team that's that strong behind him, and yet he is, able to win the race. He takes the time when he needs to. He's been strong enough when he's been vulnerable. And it's been a real kind of, he's plotted his way around France quite smartly rather than crushing his opponents.
An interesting peculiarity of this tour is that actually all the guys who narrowly finished second in stages and really, you know, in nail-biting finales like Warren Barguil, Mathias Bodnar, and Edvald Boasson-Hagen, all lost by a blink of an eye, and they were avenged in the last week of the tour by winning their stage. Very strange, but that's, you know, one of the oddities of this tour.
Hi, I'm Riko. I'm a barista in the Rafa Clubhouse in Osaka. You are listening to the cycling podcast in association with Rafa.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much indeed to our sponsor, Rafa. A reminder that you can get some Rafa kit, Pedaleur de Charme, range of clothing, t-shirts available, caps available, jerseys sold out for the moment, but they will be available again soon. See rafa.cc, also thecyclingpodcast.com/shop, I think it is. Is that right, Lionel?
I think it is. Sorry, I'm just slightly distracted because Romain Bardet is walking down the steps behind us, having finished his post-race press conference.
He is.
François, tell us who that was.
Well, it was Yves Perret, who was the press chief of Romain Bardet. And Bardet and Romain is going down the stairs with his team manager, Vincent Lavenu. Back on his bike, he looks a little bit, let's face it, he had a bad day. As you pointed out, Romain Bardet, he was not a very good job.
Romain Bardet.
he was.
He did a very good job of not being distracted by you staring at him there, though, Lionel. That
well,
was good.
I had my mirrored sunglasses on, so he didn't notice that I was staring at him.
Look, before we crack on with our analysis of today's stage, we've just sat through Chris Froome's press conference, the winner's press conference, always on the Saturday night.
We really did sit through it, didn't we?
Well, we did sit through it. Yeah, I stood, actually. But Bardet came and gave his conference as well, Bodnar too. But before we get on with that, let's just give you a little reminder of things that we've got coming up, because when the tour finishes on Sunday, you will be bereft and you'll need things to listen to, obviously. No more kilometre zeros on Monday to Friday, unfortunately. Sad, but... We will be releasing the cycling podcast Femina, which will be a special on La Course, which was Thursday and today, and that will come out probably Tuesday, certainly at the start of the week. Later in the week, we'll be releasing part two of The Road Trip, which is our sort of behind-the-scenes story of our travels around France.
Increasingly scurrilous anecdotes in part two.
Very.
Part one was just a mere hors d'oeuvre.
It was sort of a test, wasn't it? See what we could get away with. And we've been emboldened by the reaction to that. But also this coming week, we've got our special Inside the Team Car with Cannondale Drapac. I spent the first day in the Alps in the Cannondale team car, and it was an eventful day for them. They had three riders in the big crash involving Marcel Kittel. Just when Ken Van Mark, who is Sepp Van Mark's brother and a director at Cannondale, was telling me a story about the theory behind why Sepp crashed in the Tour of Flanders, just as he was telling me that story and nearing its conclusion, three of his riders fell off. It wasn't great timing, but it made for a dramatic start to the day. We then spent a lot of the day behind the breakaway because they had two riders in that. We had a ringside seat as Alberto Contador bridged across. Lots went on, and it's a real good insight. Hey, there's Seb Piquet. Seb, you're not going to join us on the podcast briefly, or do you have to rush off? We've had requests. Okay, he'll be back in a moment. So that's coming up this week as well. So that's three things to look forward to this week. We didn't talk about La Course. We have an episode coming out dedicated to it, so I feel we should leave it to that. But maybe... an opportunity missed a little bit with La Course, and we've got very mixed reaction in that episode coming up from the riders, and some really, really interesting comments from Ashley Moulman-Passio, the South African rider, about what could be done better, and in particular, what some of the male riders could do as well, perhaps, to help their female counterparts. So what do we make of it, lads? It's almost over, the tour.
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, it's been an interesting day. It's a slightly strange atmosphere in the Stade Vélodrome. I mean, it's an imposing structure, but it didn't quite work. I mean, I'm a little bit cautious about coming across as a right old moaning mini. Nothing's been good or nothing's quite worked. But at the end of the day, the race wasn't decided as they rolled out and in to the Vélodrome. It was just decided out on the road, and as Francois said, you know, Chris Froome did did more than enough today to win. But the ride of the day was definitely Maciej Bodnar. Let's not forget, he was almost, well, he almost won the stage into Po, didn't he, when there had been the big breakaway, and he then went off on his own and was caught within, well, within spitting distance of the finish line. So after Bora Hansgrohe's quite challenging opening week, they obviously had a stage win with Peter Sagan before then. Sagan was kicked out of the race for, well, let's not go back over all that again. You can listen to the podcast from the first week. We talked about the move or non-move with Mark Cavendish. But it was all smiles at the Bora Hansgrohe bus this evening. Mm. So let's hear first of all from the team boss, Ralf Denk, and then, François, you spoke with...
Enrico Boitschke, the team director, sports director.
Yeah, in the end is fantastic. Huh? We have two stage wins here. It was not easy for us. The Tour de France was like a roller coaster. But we as a team stay always together. We create a good harmony. Also, the last stages in the Alps was not kind like we expect. We missed three times the break. But also, we discussed this yesterday with our riders. And we analyzed just. We put not pressure to the riders. And I think that's the right balance to keep the harmony in the team. Everybody was free to give full gas today, and Maciej Bodnar take the chance and nice victory. Yeah.
Talk about that day when the 54-man break went and you weren't in it, and then there was the Bora riders chasing. I mean, it looked like the sports directors have maybe said, well, you've missed it, you now have to ride on the front of the peloton, almost like as a punishment. Was there like a... Was morale a little bit down that day?
Yeah, for sure. The morale was not on the highest point, but we would like to show our jerseys as well in the front, and we are still there. Huh? For some riders, was really a hard time without Peter and without Rafael. But anyway, so far the team did a great tour, and yeah, we have two stage wins. We have a top 15 with a young German, so we can looking forward.
And on today's stage, when Bodnar set the time he set, how nervous were you that somebody might beat it?
For us, it was also good, a top 10 result. So we was not so nervous, for sure. As Froome was on a very similar time like Maciej and on a time split. So we was hoping for the stage win. But yeah, all good.
Had very hard days after the two leaders was out, and also in the last days. It don't work. Yeah, the whole team was very concentrated today, and we know Body is very strong, but that he can win, that was a surprise for all of you and of all of the team, and now we are very happy.
Well, he came very close in a previous stage, you know, was overtaken by the peloton in the last stretch. It's a kind of revenge for him today.
Yeah, he showed also in the last days he is strong. When the peloton catch him, some meters before the finish, it was very hard for him, for the mind, but he was keep fighting and concentrated on the TT, and today I think a dream from him goes through.
What kind of guy is he? What kind of rider is he? What kind of man is he, Maciej?
Quiet guy, but very important for the team. In the team, all guys like him, and he's funny, but his personnel is quiet, but in general he have experience, he can ride classic races, he can ride grand tours on a very high level, and one from the important riders in the team.
So there was some reaction from the Happy Bora camp, and we've been joined, a popular request, Seb, a few people, because you have always appeared fairly regularly on the podcast at the tour before. You've been missing this year. Seb Piquet, you are the man that sits in the car with Thierry Gouvenou, and you're the voice of Radio Tour. Why are you laughing?
Because normally on, hi to all of you. Normally on time trials, I always follow the first guy. So I was supposed to be behind Luke Rowe, and I got modelled up with times.
You did a Delgado.
I did a Stephen Roach or whatever, and I missed. I arrived and the car just left in front of me, so I missed up. Not a very good time trial for me.
You missed your start. Voilà. So you didn't get out in the course at all then?
I just did the women's race, which was very, very good. and entertaining, but I didn't see the course for the men, so I was...
Have you been sacked then? Because
not, well, I don't know.
Who did you follow?
I have to go to the permanence, you know. When journalists do bad things, they go to the permanence.
We've all done it. Yeah. Who did you follow in the women's?
We followed Annemieke van Vleuten, and I did Radio Tour based on the times I had behind me. And the funny thing is that with basically 5Ks to go, she had absolutely no information because there was no blackboard. So we went up to her and I yelled, 1 minute 40, and her face completely changed and she started cheering.
Because this was, I mean...
She didn't know.
Here's a question for you. As a man inside the ASO, will we see that type of event, you know, they call it a pursuit. Well, we see that in the tour. Could today have been Chris Froome going off first with Romain Bardet going off 23 or whatever seconds it was later? Will we ever see that?
Why not? I know the Tour de France always tries to imagine new things. Why not? But for that, you would need to have a wide open road and a like kind of a sprint finish, because if they bunch up, you could expect a bunch sprint as well.
Yes, it's a little bit difficult to imagine a guy who's probably 6 hours done in the general classification, going 6 hours after Chris Froome, or the next day.
Do it based on a previous time trial. Why not?
Maybe. Yeah, it could be fun.
Have you had a good tour then, Seb?
Brilliant tour.
Highlights?
So I would say the view on the finish in Peyragudes. One of the decisive stages of this Tour de France, seeing Chris Froome emptied. He just said he didn't have enough fuel in his tank, and that was exactly what we saw on the road. And the food was pretty good this year.
Is there really a real moment to remember, you know? Apart from Warren Barguil's, class and attacks and kind of a swashbuckling, I find it a little bit disappointing, to be honest.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it was close. It was very close, which is what the organisers wanted. It's what the fans want, but close, but controlled. It reminds me
a bit of 2011, when we had a close race, but not a classic race.
Yeah, I think, well, I was talking to Greg LeMond, just bumped into him.
I was chatting to Greg LeMond,
as you do on the tour, you see all these people, and I was just chatting to him, and we were just reflecting on how different it could have been if Richie Porte was in the race, and then there were two proper time trialists going hell for leather on that final course, and, the time gaps were significant, so that you could have seen... You know, it would have been a very, very different race for Chris Froome if Richie Porte had still been here. But of course, you know, that's so much sort of hindsight and reverse speculation. I'm not even going to go into reverse speculation.
Well, something we could do is looking ahead to the next year's tour, because with Tom Dumoulin in it, with Vincenzo Nibali maybe back, and maybe the two Yates brothers not battling it out for the wide jersey, because I think they'll be too old by then. But it could be exciting. What do you think, Seb?
Yeah, but if you want to count on Bardet, he really needs to work on his time trial, because today Rigoberto Urán was the Mick Jagger of the Stones, so he was the Charlie Watts.
He actually said that he hadn't worked on his time trialing because he finds going out in his time trial quite boring, which I thought was refreshingly honest of him, Bardet.
That's the man he is. He says things as he thinks about them. I think there's another thing is I think he doesn't want to lose his qualities in the mountains by training too hard on the time trial bike. It's you need to find the perfect balance. And today, the winners of the Grand Tours are time trialists Chris Froome, Tom Dumoulin, and I have to leave you.
Okay, so
ciao ciao,
bonne route.
The cycling podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring Cycling Podcast. And a reminder, you can get 20% off all your Science in Sport products if you go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code CPOD20. Just spotted some rival podcasters there.
They're
copying
our slot.
That's an actual
challenge.
Hey. You can't stop there. Honestly, you're going to put us off. Distraction.
Yeah, really lifting the gauntlet here. Yes,
this is sabotage again. This is the second time we've been victim of this. Yep. Ned Bolte and David Miller did it. Now we've got some American crew. Can't remember what they're called.
bike news, right?
Is it
bike news?
Bike news. Yeah. Oh, you're top bike news.
No, I can tell you one thing. They're not Lance Armstrong, because Lance Armstrong does his podcast.
It's not
from
Lance
his
Armstrong.
From his
no,
kitchen.
No, it's not Lance Armstrong. It's not Lance Armstrong. Maybe he'll be here next year. So listen, I spoke to Dave Brailsford at the finish. Well, a few of us did. He gave his reaction. I asked him about Mika Landa's future. Here he is, Dave Brailsford.
You know, it's nice to win, but equally I don't think you can rest on your laurels. You start to think about, okay, well, where do we go next and what are we going to do next year? But I guess for now it's all about tomorrow and just enjoying the moment. I've been thinking about it, actually. The fact that we took the yellow jersey on the first day has made this a very long race, and it's been so close throughout the race that it's made it a very tense race. In that sense, it's without doubt the tensest. It's the most difficult 3 weeks, I'd say, that we've had of racing. Well, I think the fact that he lost the jersey and had to win it back again, and it's been so tight, and there's been very, very little difference on the climbs this year. I think, obviously, there was the Perigord thing, but I think that was more of a, if I'm honest, I don't think that was a physical thing. It was more of a, you know, probably more of a fueling thing, if I'm honest. So I think the gaps, you know, the gaps in the climbing have been much, much less. Time trials have, again, made a difference. But also the team's made a difference, and I think, as he said before, you know, he's absolutely right. I think he knew coming into this race, if he could pull this one off, it would be his best ever victory, and I think that's what it's proven to be.
Mikael Landa just off the podium, a second off the podium, but will he be a Team Sky rider next year?
Well, I don't know. I think we'll talk about that in the coming days, and you know, there's no doubt about it. We signed him because he's absolutely, he's just a class rider, isn't he? You know, he oozes talent. He's a nice guy, and you know, we'd focus on a Giro with him, and that didn't quite work because, unfortunately, again this year he crashed out. But there's no denying his talent, and I think he's proved that here. And to miss the podium by a second is devastating, really. And we'd definitely like him to stay. There's no doubt about that. But I think part of this sport is all about, you know you're going to be together for a small. You've got all these guys, and their lives cross for 3 weeks, and you do something together, and then people move on. And I think it's unlike a team sport, you know, eventually an individual wins, you know, supported by a team, but an individual wins. And all the guys at the top of the sport, they want their opportunity. And so I think you just have to absolutely kind of get your head around in that you're going to have guys and they come together, they do something, and then they'll move on. And you think about, okay, well, what next? And how do you keep that sort of turning? There's no point getting upset about it, or it's just part of life. It's one of the factors of the sport. So we'd very much like him to stay, but I also understand totally that, you know, these guys, a bit like Richie. You know, Richie wanted his opportunity, and he's gone to lead a team, and he's done ever so well, I think, you know. And so I think the same will happen, and we just go and find the next one and the next one and keep on going, basically.
So Chris Froome's fourth Tour de France victory in 5 years, the closest race, it's the margin was less convincing. He was less convincing. He didn't win a stage. He was asked in the press conference.
Not yet, Lionel.
Well, he's not going to win on the Champs-Élysées.
Bernardino did it.
Well, I don't think they're quite the same character, are they? But he was asked whether that bothered him, and he shrugged that off, said it didn't diminish his victory in his eyes at all. He was also asked whether, with Mikel Landa just 1 second behind Romain Bardet, Landa's fourth, Bardet is third, there are time bonuses for the final stage. I mean, people will inevitably ask, will they race? Will they try to piggyback? I need to say bunny hop Landa onto the podium. Uh-huh. Piggyback Landa onto the podium.
No, piggyback. No, bunny. Yeah.
Hang
bunny.
On.
Bunny hop.
What is it?
bunny
hop. That's a
just
leapfrog.
I mean, leapfrog. The only chance of that happening is leapfrog. Well,
leapfrog, that's what happened today with Bardet.
I mean, French audience.
Oh, goodness. Sorry,
France.
Sorry, France.
Sorry, France.
But Chris Froome played down any suggestion that Sky might try to get Landa onto the podium.
The only chance of it happening is, and there would be more chance of it happening in before the 3 second rule came in on the eve of the tour. Mm. But if the 1 second rule still applied and there was a split in the bunch and Bardet was caught on the wrong side of that split, which can happen on the Champs-Élysées, and it has happened many times, in fact.
Yeah.
Then there would be a chance. It could happen, but it's not likely to happen.
No. Chris Froome has won the Tour. Team Sky have looked very impressive. We commented about Kwiatkowski's ride today, but equally impressive, Rigoberto Urán. Very quiet, not a really demonstrative performance, but given the time that he lost in the Dusseldorf time trial, given that he never really had a bad day. He rode extremely well.
We have been not critical, but a lot of people have said, and it's easy to say from the comfort of your chair in the press room or your sofa at home, why doesn't he attack? There was a very revealing photograph near the top of the Col d'Izoard, which Chris Froome actually posted the other day, showing Froome, Bardet, and who ran the top three. And you know, it was at a moment in the climb where they were obviously on the limit, and on the limit. And as I say, it's easy to say why didn't he attack, but I think second in this race and against that team was probably the very best that Rigoberto Urán could do.
He didn't attack, but unlike Chris Froome, he won a stage.
Very true, yeah. He did win a stage by the skin of his teeth against Warren Barguil. But Urán as well, 54 seconds down. He's not the first Colombian to finish on the podium, of course, because Fabio Parra was the first in 88. We've also had Nairo Quintana two or three times. But he is the closest ever to the yellow jersey, Rigoberto Urán, at the end of the race, 54 seconds.
I found him, you know, we tend to say he's withdrawn, he doesn't attack, he's blah, blah, blah. But today in the press conference, he was very talkative. And very often, we tend to consider the kind of Spanish-speaking word as being aloof and withdrawn just because he doesn't speak good English. But he looked pretty talkative today. And I noted very important thing. He said that probably Chris Froome had won the tour in the first stage, which is something I repeatedly said on the cycling podcast. So a guy who agrees with me can't be bad.
What a shame he didn't agree with you on Twitter, where it really counts, Francois.
Well, listen, we've got to go and have a fantastic meal that Francois has been talking about for the last 3 weeks.
We have indeed.
At this incredible restaurant in Marseille. I thought you had something to add there, Lionel.
Oh, well, I was just going to do a very brief kind of wrap-up of what else has happened today, because Simon Yates has clinched the white jersey. He's going to finish in seventh place overall. Alberto Contador did a fantastic time trial, and he leaped over Warren Barguil, pushing Barguil down to tenth. I was trying to avoid that one. So that's really the headlines from today's time trial. It was another kind of, rolling boil of a stage rather than a full it wasn't a pot of pasta spilling over, which was the poor analogy I used at the Giro.
Well, we've got one more podcast to come from this year's Tour de France, and in it we'll hear an interview with Charlie Wigelius about Rigoberto Urán and the future of the team. We'll hear thoughts from a lot of riders about what the favorite moments of this race. We've tried to get around every team for that, so that's one more podcast to come from the Tour de France. But let's go and have dinner in the meantime. Lionel, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Francois, thank you.
Thank you, guys.